Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. Now let's get started. Lainey Ishbia and Estella Lugo are friends, business partners, and advocates, and I am excited to get to speak with them today. Both ladies live with CMT, Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease. Both are moms, both have backgrounds in fashion, and both are TEDx speakers. They both have a lot going on separately, but together they host the Embrace It podcast and lead Embrace It workshops, where the overarching mission is to empower and create progress for individuals living with disabilities. We have a ton to dig into, so I am going to get started. You guys, I am so excited that you're here. You two are both clearly incredible people, all on your own as, you know, individual people, but together, you are a force to be reckoned with. I mean, do places just like spontaneously combust when you get together? Do crazy things happen when you guys get together?
I don't know about crazy. I think, we definitely have a unique chemistry, and I think we just complement each other really well. So thank you.
Oh, yeah. And we kind of have that brunette thing locked. So
you do.
We'll be really in trouble if Estella, well, not me, I'll never go blonde, but if Estella ever does, we're done. We're finished. Oh, but yeah. We got the little brunette thing.
You do. You look like you could be sisters. So how did you two meet?
Oh, wow. So I think I work for the Hereditary Neuropathy Foundation. So I think we are always kind of on the lookout for, you know, with the Google CMT, Google alerts, and people pop up on our radar that are doing things within the community. And then just one day, a few years ago, Lainey popped up on our radar with this amazing adaptive fashion blog for people that wear leg braces. And we were like, whoa, pump the brakes. We need to figure out who this woman is. We need to reach out to her. And that's kind of how it all got started.
And it was really cool. This was exactly 5 years ago, because Trendable was launched 5 years ago. And when I launched it, you know, I had like a wonderful support, you know, from family and friends and people in general. But what was so cool is that the people from H&F, these women who I know that you already said, Charcot-Marie-Tooth, like I had met people other than my own family and older people with Charcot-Marie-Tooth. So to see these faces that were like me, you know, people who I could relate to, who got it from the perspective of being active people, not necessarily like homebodied people who are, you know, are in support groups where they're complaining. Like these women were thriving and living with CMT the same way I was. So it was an instant connection. And it turned out, unfortunately, my mom passed away 3 weeks after I launched this website. And the people at H&F and Estella, especially, you know, they sent me, you know, beautiful note and a plant. And like it, that kind of like was so incredibly thoughtful. And they became instant family and friends. And then we went on to really do a lot of partnership stuff together for CMT people. And Estella and I, as you know, then kind of formed this connection and started doing what we do with Embrace It.
I love it. I love it. And Trendable, I just have to throw it out there. I absolutely love it. I was, you know, doing some research and looking through all of your stuff last night, and the product recommendations and things on Trendable are so good. I'm a wheelchair user, but I don't use leg braces, but you know, so many of the recommendations and things that you talk about are just pure gold. So everybody needs to go check it out.
Thank you. And actually, the MDA did a wonderful article on Trendable.
It's true.
Yeah. And it was Yeah, actually, they've done a couple, but MDA was also extremely supportive with Trendable. And like what we mm-hmm. do with Trendable is really look for, you know, there's only so many products right now, the same things that people have always seen, the, you know, the zip pull, the reacher, the same stuff, all stuff uh-huh. that's solid. And obviously people need. What I look for is really products that may not be specifically for people with disabilities, but can improve your life if you have fine motor weakness.
Yeah.
Or, you know, mobility issues, things mm-hmm. that are outside of the box to make your life better.
Exactly. And it's interesting that you say that. We just did a holiday gift and giving guide that you can see on mdaquest.org as well. And it was really interesting to me. We got our ambassadors involved and looked for a lot of different products that are kind of tried and true from the mm-hmm. community. And it was interesting to me because so many of the product recommendations, or I should say so few of the product recommendations, were actually things that were designed to be adaptive. Mm-hmm. Most of the product recommendations were just things that people have come across that for one specific reason or another are easy and conducive to their needs. So that it was really interesting to me. But yeah, you guys do an absolutely amazing. I have such a shopping list of things that I want that I found on your website. So I'm gonna turn the tide just a little bit and get a little bit serious for a second. There's so much to talk about with you two ladies, but I want to talk a little bit about your CMT journey. So Lainey, if you don't mind kicking us off, would you tell us a little bit about, you know, your diagnosis journey and what living with CMT is like?
Sure. Yes. Well, so I have CMT type 1A, which is the most common type of CMT. In fact, when I was diagnosed, which was at childhood, I think it was like there was only like a couple kinds. Now there's so many different ones.
Right.
I can't really speak to that. But so it's hereditary. My mom had CMT. One of my children has CMT. I have a sister who has CMT. And as you know, with all muscular dystrophy type diseases, everyone has different, you know, different abilities, different strains, different types. It looks different on everyone. For me, it has progressed fairly slowly. As a child, I, you know, the typical things like gym class sucked. I couldn't run. I mean, before I had my ankles fused, which was later on in life, you know, I think I ran, but I always looked kind of funny doing it. I didn't have great hand grip to be able to do the things that in the 80s you had to do in these presidential fitness tests that were a nightmare. And so I avoided most of that and found that, you know, which wasn't necessarily the best decision, but it's what I did. And I just avoided things that I felt uncomfortable doing back then and putting that out there and being last picked for, you know, dodgeball was not high on my list of things I wanted to be a part of. So I avoided them. Fast forward, I didn't go into leg braces until my late 20s. I, at the time, was living in Chicago. I had a master's in social work and was living and working in Chicago, and I just started falling, and I hadn't fallen before. I mean, I had, you know, occasionally fallen, but I was just tripping over my own feet. And that was because of the drop foot, and it was becoming more significant. And back then, actually, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, that was who I called. I mean, that was where I went because they gave free braces at the time for people who had some form of muscular dystrophy. I don't even know if that's still done, but I went to a muscular dystrophy clinic and I wasn't ready for full AFOs. So I started with ones that came up to my ankles. But if anybody's out there who knows CMT, you know, that doesn't really do shit.
Like,
did not do anything. So then, you know, I was given my first pair of braces that, you know, AFOs that came up to my knees, and they were the hard plastic.
Yes.
Kind, and there was no option. Like, that's what I got. And I hated them. I put them on the shelf, took them out, put them on the shelf, really felt like it affected my self-esteem because I was always into clothes and shoes. And I was miserable with those braces, but at the same time, I really needed them. And, you know, I guess the rest from there is really about how Trendable formed, but my CMT now affects my hands. Mm-hmm. I have very poor fine motor. Mm-hmm. I'm strong because I work out all the time. So I have bicep strength that accommodates for a lot of things. But, you know, if you don't have a pincher grip, you don't have a pincher grip. So I couldn't pick up a penny off the ground to take an hour, few hours.
It's not worth much anymore anyway.
No, so. I'm just, you know, buttons, stuff like that. And my foot drop, you know, really with wearing, which I now wear very lightweight carbon fiber AFOs, mm-hmm. you know, they allow me to do everything. If not, mm-hmm. you know, like I can walk for miles and miles and miles. And I would say I have a pretty severe form of CMT, but if you looked at me, you wouldn't even know there is anything.
Gotcha. Okay. And how old were you when you were diagnosed?
Because my mom had it. So in elementary school, when you started to like run and do stuff, I think that's when I went through the nerve conduction tests and stuff as a young child.
Okay. And Estella, do you mind telling us a little bit about your journey, and is it similar? Is it dissimilar? How old were you when you were diagnosed?
In some ways, I kind of started my journey a little earlier. I was diagnosed at about 3.5 years old. I was the oldest of two daughters. So my parents started noticing I was tripping a lot and, you know, walking with flappy feet. So, you know, looking back, I'm kind of amazed that I was able to be diagnosed in the early 80s at 3.5 years old, because there's still people today that are misdiagnosed or can't get a confirmed diagnosis in 2022. Yeah. They really had no idea. Unlike Lainey, mine was a spontaneous mutation. So there was no family history. My parents had no idea what CMT was, what to expect. The only reference they had was Jerry Lewis Telethon, muscular.
Yeah.
Right.
So, back in the day.
Oh, yeah. And so, that kind of started our journey. And then as I was being diagnosed, my mother was pregnant with my sister and 2.5, less than 2 years. When she started walking, they were more kind of aware of what the symptoms and what the signs were. And she was diagnosed as well. So, you know, it was very devastating for them. They didn't know what to expect. They were just going off of what the doctors were telling them. We were both wearing leg braces in kindergarten, and that was kind of our norm. So we didn't really know anything different. And then, you know, kind of much like yourself, Mindy, my parents kind of submitted my photo to MDA for a poster child call when I was 7. And I ended up being the poster child for Long Island for about, you know, 5 years. And then my sister was as well. So our childhood was very much like in the spotlight. Every weekend, we were going to MDA fundraisers. We were on TV. We were volunteering. Our family was very heavily involved in the chapters and the telethons. And like that became our life. So it was, in a way, it was very positive. My parents were very proactive. I think it made it a lot easier. We didn't feel like we had to hide our disability. Mm-hmm. We went to the MDA summer camps, which were
Awesome. Did both of you go to those camps? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, Lainey didn't, right?
No. Literally very different. You know, Estella was taught really wonderful, you know, like empowering things about her disability. And, you know, obviously my mom is deceased and she did her best, but it was more just like, you have this, deal with it, move on.
Gotcha.
And, you know, we didn't really talk about it. It was just was what it was.
Okay. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. I mean, so I have a lot of great memories with MDA and just all the support that they provided. And I think it really kind of laid the foundation for a life in advocacy. You know, much like Lainey, I wasn't really able to contribute or participate in sports. So I leaned towards the arts and the creative world. And I pursued a career in design and loved interior design, fashion design, things like that. So, you know, I kind of found there was always a way to kind of navigate, you know, where I had to and adapt to where I had to. Mm-hmm. I have two beautiful children now who do not have CMT because of the type that we have is recessive and spontaneous. But yeah, it's been a journey. I still wear leg braces. It is progressive. I've lost more mobility, hand function. It does affect my vocal cords now. Mm. So that's been over the past few years. Just, you know, my voice has gotten weaker and I get more fatigued, things of that nature. But
okay,
yeah, it's a very wide spectrum of severity. And, you know, we're just kind of part of this big family. And I'm just, it's really a pleasure to be speaking with you today and sharing our
story. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really interesting to listen to you both talk and, you know, the nuances of your stories. And Lainey, like you said, the kind of different ways that you grew up and yet you come together and you've got this common bond and we can all kind of help each other through it. So I think if I'm not mistaken, both of you have kids. Who, I don't know who wants to grab this one first, but can you talk just a little bit about how parenting is affected by your CMT, or is it?
Oh, deep breath when you mentioned kids.
Right? I know.
And, you know, full disclosure, this is after Thanksgiving. They were home and mine are both in college, and you're so excited to have them come home. Like, I was counting down the minutes, like,
yes,
until they got home. And then literally they're home for an hour. I'm counting down the minutes.
Yeah. But Stella, you know, talk to me a little bit about parenting with some physical limitations. You know, we probably got a lot of listeners out there who are parents, are about to be parents, or thinking about being parents. What was that like for you, and how did you navigate it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of anxiety with just becoming a parent in general in a healthy body. But then, of course, when you add disability to that, it just adds another layer to, you know, all the potential challenges that someone can face. I think for me, it just kind of started with, you know, the whole genetics of it and still not knowing whether or not this was the type of CMT that I could pass on. So once we crossed that bridge, I could take a little bit of a breath. But, you know, it's almost like there's really no part of parenting that disability doesn't affect in a lot of ways. I feel like it's just kind of, it's woven into the whole experience of being a parent. And, you know, like anyone else, it's an opportunity for growth. And to really kind of, for me, it really shifted my perspective on what I wanted to do with my life. It also kind of had a good positive impact on making sure that I was going to stay as healthy as possible so that I could be as active and present with them as I possibly could. So I started working out more and started eating better and just being more aware of how I was taking care of myself as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's that guilt that comes along with it. I couldn't run around and throw catch with my kids or, you know, run on the beach with them or go skiing for the first time or, you know, even put my daughter's hair in pigtails because of my hand weakness. So like all of like anything from like those day-to-day things that I think probably almost everyone takes, you know, takes for granted it can be really exhausting. And if we don't kind of check in with ourselves and make an agreement with ourselves that we're not going to internalize that guilt and our limitations as us being bad parents, then, you know, I think we can get through those moments, but it's hard. You know, there's a lot of guilt.
Yes.
And we have to
navigate. So true. Lainey, any other perspective?
Well, I mean, I get a lot of people. Yeah. Well, I get a lot of people writing me through Trendable pages asking about my experience and like knowing my type of CMT is hereditary. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people have asked, well, how did you make the decision? Weren't you worried? Like, why did you, a lot of people choose not to have children or nowadays. And my sister chose this route of having in vitro and being able to separate the CMT, you know, CMT. There's got to be a better word than infected. Did, but CMT, whatever.
Yeah.
My personal feeling is that, you know, yeah, you can like, you know, get rid of that, but then you could get something worse or, you know, you're kind of playing with whatever. And my mom, you know, even though we didn't, she didn't do the best job of like talking about CMT or empowering me about CMT, what she did do is showed me that like, you just live, you know, like,
yeah,
there is. So I was worried before while I was pregnant about things that were out of my control. Like, mm-hmm. what if my little boy is going to run away from me? Like everyone says that they do at the mall. And like, I wouldn't put my kid on a leash, but like, I kind of get why people do that. Like,
yeah,
so all that stuff. But I personally feel like you kind of get what you can handle. So, and your kids, even as babies, pick up on the things you need and how, what you need and what they need safety wise and what they need from you. So I have this really, you know, I said both of my kids, one of my kids has CMT, one of them doesn't. And the one who has CMT, it's extremely mild. They don't wear leg braces yet, but my son who does not have CMT is a total sports boy. He is active. He is busy. He is, you know, like a stereotypical boy, but he never left my side. Like never. I would say, Blake, sit here. He'd sit. And and having a disability gives your kids gifts that are priceless. So I believe that because of my disability, both my kids are much more empathetic to others. Mm-hmm. They understand things that most adults who do not have disabilities aren't sensitive to. They think about people and what they, you know, may or may not be able to do before making assumptions. They, they're really intuitive and they have great, both of my kids have like really good emotional intelligence. And I think that comes from having a parent with disabilities. So yeah,
absolutely. And you know, I'm a mom also. We actually made the choice to adopt and adopted our daughter when she was five. And so, you know, it's interesting. You've got three moms here with different stories and different experiences. But I think that between the three of us, what I'm hearing and what I'm kind of picking out of the conversation is that you work it out. You know, where it's cliche, but where there's a will, there's a way. And, you know, I think, Lainey, what you said about kids picking up on what you need is so true. And, you know, from such a young age, kids are so trainable, you know, and I think that they really understand a lot more than we give them credit for. And, you know, it's kind of a two-way street where they're picking up on what we need, what our limitations are, how we're going to work together to make all of these things happen. And kids are amazingly resilient. And I could not agree more that I think growing up in a family with a family member with a disability creates such a sensitivity and such an empathy in kids that they grow up with and, you know, really positions them to go world.
I'm laughing because like, as you're talking, I'm thinking about my dogs. Like I'm way more concerned about like losing my dogs and like what happens when they get away. Like, you know, but then I think,
dogs don't get it.
But then I think they got a warm house. They have a cushy mattress. They like have all the Stella knows I spoil them rotten. Like they might go away, but they probably come back. Why would I want to go out here? I mean, you can't worry about what you don't know. And honestly, it's a personal choice. A lot of people choose the genetic route and like whatever and doing all that. And that's totally an individual decision. But I will say that not having children or making the choice because of, you know, my CMT was never even a thought. I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I don't have, you know, knock on wood, for the most part, T is not fatal for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother actually passed away because of CMT's influence, but she passed away from pulmonary issues related to having a weak diaphragm. And so, you kind of like, you learn from that too, right? Like my mom was not into exercise. My mom sat around a lot and was very social, very, very, very social. Yeah. She didn't prioritize like weightlifting and the things that may have prevented that. Like you just deal as you deal, right? Like, and with children, none of us would have had children if we would have known what they're like as actual teenagers. And
like, what happens to them when they turn 13? It's aliens take over their bodies. But I digress. So yeah, but I don't know if you guys follow Marie Forleo, but the phrase everything is figure outable is coming to mind.
Yeah.
And I think that that's so true when it comes to parenting. You get creative and you figure it out. So where did your, you know, it sounds like you both grew up very differently, but where did your empowered outlook and mission in life come from? Estella, let's start with you.
I think, again, going back to having that foundation that was so strong all of those years growing up around a community and people that were selfless and wanted to move forward and had a purpose, like that was kind of the groundwork. But then, you know, circling back after I had, you know, I had my children and had a career, like I still felt like something was missing. And I didn't really make the connection until I came across the documentary called Bernadette that the foundation that I work for now actually funded. It's going to be the 10-year anniversary actually next year.
Wow. We'll have to put that link in the show notes.
It's on Amazon Prime. It's an amazing documentary. And it just kind of brought home like within just a really powerful moment of just like almost remembering who I was, why I was here, like that there was something bigger. And just remembering that there was people outside of my, you know, just me and my sister living with CMT and almost kind of like planting this seed and this question, like, how can I use my skills and my talents and then combine them with this bigger purpose, right? Like, and that's kind of how it started again for me. And I started volunteering for the foundation. I just wanted to be part of it again. But this time I was bringing my creative services and my creativity to the table. So it looked different and I could see how that could impact, you know, fundraising, how that could impact spreading the word about genetic testing and helping people get educational, you know, resources and webinars and things that would actually really make a difference. Like all of these things that I wish I had growing up, like models, adaptive fashion, like all of these things that can make us feel so isolated growing up that if we would have just seen ourselves represented differently or had those resources or even known where to find those pair of shoes when we were going back to school shopping, like how that could have impacted us. So I kind of came back full circle and was like, oh, now it all makes sense, right? Now I can see my experience, my education, and I can make something new from it. And
love it. And you're problem solving. You're filling the void that existed for you growing up. And I think some people are just kind of natural problem solvers. Lainey, does that describe you as well? Where did empowered outlook come from?
One of my skill sets has always been to just find workarounds for everything. And it doesn't even, not only because of disabilities, but just in general, like I'm the person who finds things like, oh, you're looking for something. I'll find it. Like I figure things out and, the cliche, you can do anything you want. Like, no, you can't do anything with a disability, but you can do, you know, there is a way to do it differently if you want to do it, right? So like, that's kind of how I live. And I mean, there's a lot of things I don't even care about doing, you know?
Right, exactly.
Like Estella said, skiing. Like I've never obviously been skiing. That is something I cannot do. And I don't even have a need to figure out a way to do it. I have no desire to do it. I don't want to be in snow or on snow or have anything to do with snow.
You know, so we're going to get letters from people giving links to adaptive skiing for you, right?
There is. And I could, but I see like, that's the example. Like, I don't even want to
you know, of course.
Just because you can doesn't mean you want to. Right. So like, I don't know. So I am all about like, you know, using your best assets, and that's what you bring to the table. And, you know, I mentioned that I have, you know, a background as a social worker, and I did a lot of work with teenagers and women in my professional career before Trendable and Embrace It, with self-esteem and body image issues. And I had a lot of body image issues growing up, and a lot of it probably stems from the fact that my family wasn't open, and there was a perfectionism ideal of, you know, what I wanted to look like and what I felt like was ideal and acceptable. And I hid my disabilities, like, you know, truly most of my life. No one really even knew. I'd lie and make up excuses. So now I'm all about doing what works for you. So people, you know, I wrote an article on Trendable a while ago called, you know, leg braces to show or not to show, you know, that is the question. And it doesn't make you more confident. Like, just because, you know, Estella chooses maybe to show her leg braces and I, on an everyday basis, you know, do not, that's all good. Like, what I encourage people to do is really to do what feels good. Like, if you feel like hiding your leg braces is hiding who you are, then don't hide them.
Right.
I don't feel like my leg braces are who I am. Like, I don't feel a need. And frankly, I'd care about what I'm wearing more than, you know, telling people I have a disability. Like, I don't need to tell everybody, and I don't care to. Like, so that's all, you know, individual. So I just blabbled on as usual, but
No. That's all so good. And it's, you know, I think that it's something that we can all learn from, and because self-esteem and all of that is particularly for women is such a prevalent thing. And so I love the way that you framed all of that. I want to talk about your podcast and your workshop. Both are called Embrace It, and I think they are fantastic. In fact, I think I may or may not be showing up in an episode of Embrace It podcast.
Yes, one of these days. Good one.
Oh, you're so nice. But tell us a little bit, and we're running out of time, but I have like 9,000 more questions I would love to ask you. But if one of you could talk a little bit about the podcast and the workshop and how they came to be, and you know what your mission is with those two things.
Yeah, I think they happen both really organically. I think, you know, Lainey and I were just so excited at the chemistry that we both had, because we felt like, well, you know, how could we share this with other people who maybe doesn't have that close friend that they could talk to about disability openly and who really gets it? So we were having all these great conversations between the two of us. And with Lainey's background in social work, she had more of like a framework on how to talk about these issues around disability, how to be more assertive, and you know, and the different types of communication, and it really kind of set a different tone on what our role is as people with disabilities, how we can communicate with the world better, how we can get a better outcome, how just by using humor or using different tools or seeing things differently, or rethinking a situation, how we can have a better outcome. And so, you know, Lainey put, you know, our first workshop was at a H&F Summit. It was so much fun. And that was really different. It wasn't like your typical traditional support group where, you know, unfortunately they have a lot of bad rap and people are crying and like, you know, it's, which is needed as well. But this was fun. It was role-playing. It was experimenting on how we can have these interactions in a better way. And it gave power back to the people with disabilities. And so we felt less like, you know, the victims. And then at the same time, you know, we started having these conversations on the podcast, just the two of us. And then we slowly started bringing up in guests. And then we started going outside of the CMT community and just thinking bigger about disability, that, you know, there's so many other common threads no matter what kind of disability you have, whether it's mobility, vision, hearing, amputee, like it's such a huge demographic. And I think it only empowers us even more, you know, as this huge group in the world, to know how many people out there really have different disabilities and learn from their journeys. Everyone has such a unique perspective and the amazing gems that they can share. And that's kind of what we're doing.
And embrace it really. Like, so our workshops and the podcast, you know, are geared for people. The parts that are geared for people with disabilities cover everything from how to communicate with someone about your disability, how to disclose your disability, how to, you know, so like very practical, but fun everyday thing. You go to work every day, how to talk to your coworkers, how to tell them what you have or not, how to, you know, go to get a pedicure and explain that you can't do this or can't do that. Little things. We give scenarios, we give tips. We want people to really walk away with like concrete steps that can change their lives. And, you know, separately from that, as Estella alluded to, we work with companies and businesses and we talk to them about how to talk to people about disabilities. So how, you know, just make an assumption with one out of four people having an adult having a disability that you have people who haven't disclosed. How can you make your workplace safer? What's the communication that you should and could use in your workplace to empower people with and without disabilities to be their authentic selves? And that's, it makes the workplace stronger, right? So
yeah, that's so good and so needed in this world. I asked you leading up to this interview, I asked you ladies to send me your top three aha moments from 2022 from your podcast. And one of the ones that you mentioned, and all three of these, we could have a whole podcast about, but one of them, you said there's still so much harmful stigma and discrimination of disability. And, you know, when I read that and I started kind of ruminating on it, you know, air travel and employment come to mind first and foremost before anything else. I'm sure there are, you know, tons of other things that we could talk about, but those two things in particular, the inequity and the dehumanization that related to these two things alone in 2022, the idea that we can't drive a wheelchair onto an airplane, or that only about 28% of individuals with disabilities who are available to work actually do, blows my mind in 2022. What needs to happen? I mean, this is a big question, but what needs to happen to turn this around? Yeah, and this kind of dovetails into your podcast and the work that you do in your workshops.
It dovetails into the TEDx that hopefully will be released by the time this podcast.
Yes, appears. Both of you have done TEDx.
Yes, yes, and the one I just did was all about invisible disabilities, and you know, realizing of course that this audience may have visible and visible disabilities, but what I think needs to happen truthfully is that more people, if people can relate to you, they're that much closer to reducing the stigma. So we need more people to basically, you know, be advocates for themselves, to share and tell people, yeah, I have this, this is how I am, and do it in a very matter of fact way, not in this like big production of like, this is my long list of medications I take, life sucks, blah, blah, blah. Not that, but just as a matter of like introduction, like, yeah, I'm Lainey. I have CMT. Oh, you want to know what CMT is? This is what it is. That is what is going to help. But so many of us don't tell anybody. We struggle alone. We don't say anything. And so how can people relate if they don't even know anybody who has disabilities?
It's so true. It's such a good point. Because I do a lot of speaking to companies, and I'm always surprised at how many people tell me that they don't have a disabled person in their life. And so as a result, because they haven't been exposed to disability, at least that they know of, they don't know how to act and how to speak to somebody and all of these things. And you're so very right. I think that the issues and the topics and just people in general living with disabilities need to be more in our line of sight every day. I think there's almost like a desensitization that needs mm-hmm. to happen to kind of normalize all of this so that we can embrace it. Ha, huh? See what I did there?
And did it. We love it.
And you know, incorporate it into more equity in the world. So I'm on my soapbox, but one of the other aha moments that you sent me was that the sheer spectrum of disability is so much larger than we realize. Estella, can you hit on this one just for a second and talk a little bit about what we can do with this piece of information?
Yeah, no, I think it really ties into, you know, what we've been saying is that we need to have these conversations more in the open. We need to feel more comfortable speaking about, even if it's, you know, I think we need to rebrand disability, and, you know, we need to really highlight not just the extreme ends of disability. You have like completely fully able-bodied person, and then you have a person who is very much obviously disabled, but there's this whole spectrum in the middle. You know, for example, we've interviewed guests with a vision impairment. And when we think of somebody in the blind community, you know, our mind right away goes to, oh, they only see completely blackout. Like that's what blindness is. We can't see anything at all. Or if someone's deaf, they can't hear anything at all. But really, the majority of these types of disabilities are everything from, you know, have a limited vision to, you know, more severe vision loss. So I think we need to have more of these conversations with people that are on these different parts of the spectrum to really understand all of the ways in which disability affects us and all the types of accommodations that are necessary in order for us to thrive. And a lot of these accommodations are not, you know, huge, expensive changes. They're just, a lot of them are just being more mindful of that these disabilities even exist.
Yeah.
Sitting next to you at your office every day has the color blindness and can't decipher red or green on a spreadsheet. That's a disability.
Yeah. Right?
So I think just rebranding what disability is and being more specific about what falls under the umbrella of disability.
I love what you just said. And rebranding disability is brilliant. I'm creating a hashtag and that's happening. Yes. So just to round it out, and I think we've talked about this one quite a bit over the course of our conversation, but the third aha that you sent me from 2022 for you is that real conversations matter and are vital for real change. And Estella, I think that you just talked about that brilliantly. So I'm going to wrap by asking you both the same question, whoever wants to start, but we are at the end of a year and we're going into a new year. And a lot of people are thinking about what they want for themselves in the new year. They're setting goals, things like that. What is the one piece of advice? I'm sure you have lots of advice you could give, but one piece of advice that comes to mind that you could give to someone listening about how to start off the new year as empowered as possible?
I would say just start, you know? Mm. A lot of times people just are like, you and I talked, Mindy, like someone asked me yesterday, she's like, oh my God, someone literally was like, I want to do a TED Talk, like, you know, whatever, or I've been looking at them. And I'm like, just apply. That's what it comes down to. Like, if you want to have more friends, then go do stuff.
Leave your house.
If you want to lose weight, then start, you know, writing down what you're eating. Like, there's just, you just have to start. So you start, and that is, and don't be hard on yourself, because it's not always linear, right? Everyone has days where things aren't exactly how you're intended them to go, and then just start again. Like, so I just do, and that's what I recommend for people, is stop get out of your head, stop planning to do, just start doing.
That's so good. I love that, because you're absolutely right. And I am guilty of getting stuck in the planning to start phase And it doesn't matter if the first step is the right step, it's a step.
Right.
I love that. I love that. Estella, what about you?
Yeah, I think really understanding your why even before you start taking action is super vital, because a lot of people are taking action based on someone else's expectations, or they're comparing themselves to someone else, or I should be doing that, or I don't know what to do with my life, or I don't know what to do with my career. All of those things that I think we are most successful when we're aligned with our purpose, when we're aligned with what brings us joy, authentically brings us joy. And then from there, we have much more momentum to move forward, and we're less likely to burn out. Like, you know, we work our asses off, Lainey and I, but we love what we do. And if we didn't, we wouldn't still be doing it, because it takes a lot of work and effort. So I think first is just really reflecting on, if money was not an issue, what would you be doing? Is there something, you know, maybe it's around your disability. Maybe you see a need for, maybe you're a mom of a child with autism and you see a need for, you know, some kind of toy that's not out there, or some kind of program that you know would benefit your child and other children. Start there. Start with the need. Start testing out what that would look like. Start talking to people about it as well, because that'll get you, you know, help people support you and get ideas and learning about what that is that brings you joy. And it'll slowly begin to develop. I think a lot of people expect to have all the answers and to be able to like execute immediately. But I think there's a lot in that development stage that can be underestimated as well.
That's really good. I think a lot of us get caught up in shoulds, you know, and we do something because we think we should. And you're so right. I think really understanding your motivation behind something it's the thing that's going to keep you going, because accomplishing something, going after a goal is hard. And at some point you're going to get tired and you're going to want to throw in the towel. But you're right. If you understand why you started in the first place, that's the thing that you can revisit that's going to keep you going. You guys are so smart. I'm pretty sure that we became best friends during this conversation. And I'm just so excited to have had this conversation with you and to continue to watch your journey and all of the amazing things you're putting out in the world.
Thank you, Mindy.
And well, we loved being with you. Estella's been listening to you on Audible. I had a meeting with you on my own. So we truly are girlfriends. And, you know, it's really, really nice to meet another person affiliated with muscular dystrophy and who, you know, is living the best they can and thriving. So we appreciate you having us so much. And
thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. If you have not read Mindy's book, please pick it up. And I'm halfway through it. I'm just like zooming through it, because your personality is just so contagious. And I think it's such a wonderful read for anyone. And it's just not just somebody with a disability. Mm-hmm. It's like that's how you see the world through your disability and how you kind of navigate each of the things that suck. But I think it's so relatable to everyone. And it really, like, I'm loving listening to it.
Obviously, Estella is available as a publicist, but I get
it. I was going to say, I'm going to have to send you a check.
I mean, honestly, I feel like I need a commission from her publicity. She does the work, really? And I'll get the payment. But yeah, she's been raving about it. So I definitely need to put it on my list. So,
well, I appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having us. I got to go get a mammogram.
Thank you for being here. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content, and maybe share it with a friend or two.
Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.